This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to The Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
I know somebody who loves bowling.
Like going to go bowling? Like with friends?
And I would say he's a bowling groupie.
Like watching or going?
Watching, going, but he'll watch bowling from different countries. He'll watch like bowling from Germany.
Hamburg's a hotbed of bowlers.
But it's not, like, I don't know anything about bowling other than I get better the more I drink, but that's about it. Yeah, see.
The only other thing that I know is, who do you think you are? I am. I know that about bowling.
That was a great video clip. Pete Weber. That was great. Let's see. Tim Legler from the Mothership here, joining us on loan from the Mothership. Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Good morning, Dan. I love bowling, too. I have my own bowling shoes I bought, which is weird, I know. But I have a 15, and a lot of those 15s at the bowling alleys, they're so stretched out, the Velcro straps, they like slip off your feet. So I bought my own bowling shoes. I love the bowl.
I have my own bowling shoes, and I had my own bowling ball as well. Did you guys ever bowl in the NBA?
No, never. Never. Huh. I love it. I swear. I could go bowling 2-3 times a week. That's how much I love doing it.
Thanks for coming on. That's all I wanted to know, Tim.
Thanks for having me.
So Tim is a former player and one of the great shooters in NBA history. If you played now, what would your career be like now as opposed to what it was?
First of all, even back then, if I didn't have that knee injury I had at 29 years old, you know, you tack another 6-7 years on to the end of it, it would look different too. But today, you know, playing in this style, this system, I mean, I'm going out there every night, Dan, and I'm expecting to take 6, 8, 10 3-point shots a night. Are you kidding me? With that kind of freedom mentally to know that there is no such thing as a bad three that I could take, I can't imagine like what that would do to unleash, like, just you have no inhibition. And for a great shooter to have no inhibition whatsoever, as especially as a role player, believe me, I watch it every night. I just can't believe the freedom that these guys have.
But who do you think would their career would have changed if they had played today? Let's say they played in the 70s, 80s, 90s, that given this game now, we would look at them differently.
I think any of the guys that you know, were kind of like the way I played. I mean, even a guy like Kerr, he and I, you know, battled it out. We were basically the same exact years in the league, very similar type players. Can you imagine, you know, being able to come out and knowing that they almost expect you to shoot the ball every time you touch it? Where, you know, when I played, it was incomprehensible on a 3-on-2 break to fan out for a 3-point shot. It's just, that's just not what you did. You know, you were not taught the game that way. And I felt like the green light on teams I played on, but the green light was a different shade of green. That's what I'm saying. You still had to think through the process. Is this a good shot? Isn't it? You knew what the team was trying to get. A lot of the, when I played, it was inside out bait. We had a bunch of great post players in Washington. That ball was going in there first, guarantee you, up the floor, allow double teams to happen. The ball gets moved around the perimeter, and then you're allowed to take the shot. But some of these shots these guys take in the first 5-6 seconds of the shot clock, and no one even bats an eye at it. Coaches, you know, they clap their hands on a miss on a shot, you know, that quickly. It really blows my mind. But look, I'm all for it. I'm happy for the players to have that kind of freedom. I wish I did, though.
We've been talking about Russell Westbrook's place in history. His head coach, Scotty Brooks, said he might be the second greatest point guard of all time. We've kind of lost these designations, though, Legs, because Steph Curry is not a point guard. But can I put him in the category of, you know, point guards?
No, I agree with you. Yes, you can, I guess, because of the amount of time he's got the ball in his hands, you know, as an initial playmaker, primary ball handler up the floor. That's kind of how I describe like who the point guard is. But you're right, it's all blurred. I mean, Luka Doncic is listed as a forward, right? Is that not a point guard? LeBron James is a point guard. He's been a point guard his entire career, and we don't call him a point guard. So it's really about who dominates the ball and who's the primary ball handler, playmaker, decision maker, most possessions. That would be Curry. But you're right, I mean, they play the game completely differently than what you and I would have thought of a traditional point guard played the position like growing up.
But you have Magic as the greatest point guard of all time.
Yes, definitely. No question.
Second is?
Oh, my goodness. Second, it starts to get a little bit more debatable. Now, one of the guys that I never got to see play, I don't know, you know, how much, you know, film you've seen on the guy, but Oscar Robertson, was he a point guard? Because there are people that are going to say he's the second greatest point guard of all time. Is it John Stockton? When you look at a guy that set the table for everybody and what he did defensively too, is John Stockton the second greatest point guard? Is it Curry? I think Curry has played himself now into that position. He will be labeled a point guard historically forever. So is he? I think now it's not out of the question that Steph Curry is in that discussion and in that debate. And by the way, I know a lot of people, Dan, I've debated this with, that fun game where you say, okay, let's draft. You take five, I take five, one at a time, and let's go play one game to win everything. Historically, all the players that have ever played in the NBA, if you tell me you got first pick and you're taking Magic Johnson at point and I can't get him and I take Steph Curry, I'll be okay with that decision. I think I'm going to do pretty well in that game with Steph Curry as my guy at the point in an all-time game with 10 guys.
What about Isaiah Thomas?
Yeah, Isaiah Thomas is in there as well. I think Isaiah Thomas probably doesn't get as much credit as some of the other guys, particularly some of the guys, the contemporary guys now, because he wasn't really an explosive scorer unless he absolutely had to be. And right now, we're putting such an emphasis on the three-point shot and the eye-popping scoring numbers that these point guards put up, guys like Lillard and Curry, Westbrook a lot of nights, that we lose sight of what Isaiah Thomas was taught that position was supposed to look like on any given night. There's no question in my mind Isaiah Thomas could average 25 to 30 points if that's what he wanted to do in a given season. He didn't view it that way. That position and that team had great balance that he played on.
He's Tim Legler, ESPN NBA analyst. Did the Clippers try to avoid the Lakers?
Probably. And I think that's why Tyronn Lue was so testy about the question.
But do you have any problem with that?
No, I don't. I don't have a problem with it at all. It's one of those things where you can't control it. You know, it's not as if there are rules in place to prevent it. There's nothing you can do about it. Just like load management, just like anything else, they want guys to sit certain nights. They have criteria for it. How are you supposed to prevent a team from saying, oh, you know what, guys got a little bit of a tight hammy tonight. The groin last night felt a little twinge. We're going to sit them out this game. You can't prevent it. You can't call them liars. It's something that is very difficult to prove. It won't show up on an MRI. So you can sit guys out when you want to. And what happens at the end of the year? This is going on for a long time, by the way, the manipulation of lineups at the end of the season for a lot of different reasons. So, no, I don't have a problem with it. The only problem I have with it is what message does it send to your team if that's what you're trying to do? So internally, psychologically, I got a little bit of a problem with it. Because if you think you could win it, you shouldn't care who you play when you play them. But no, I don't have a problem with it because everyone around the league manipulates their lineups for different reasons.
Yeah, but I want the Lakers now, Tim. I just, if they start getting, they start rolling, then I don't want any part of that. If I'm the Suns, the Jazz, the Clippers, let me take my shot now and see if I can knock you out early.
I completely agree. And I use the analogy with the Lakers. They're a prize fighter. And you've got to come out and you've got to catch them with a huge hook or an uppercut in the first 30 seconds of the fight. And if you don't, each round, they're going to get stronger. And that's what's going to happen with the Lakers. Look, they might lose tonight. Wouldn't shock me. You know, they haven't played together a lot here at the end of the year, LeBron and AD. Curry's on fire. Warriors are playing well. I'm not going to be shocked if the Lakers lose. But they're not going to lose two games in a row. They're going to get in. And then they take a sigh of relief. Okay, we dodged disaster. Now you got us in a seven-game series. Each game, each round, they get stronger. And I expect them to be back in the NBA Finals. It's a weird situation. They're going to come in as a 7 or 8 seed and be favored immediately. That's a very weird thing to happen in the NBA. And it's very unfortunate for Utah or Phoenix to end up getting that team and when you had the year that you did as a 1 or 2 seed.
Who has a better chance against the Lakers? The Clippers, the Jazz, the Nuggets, Suns, Portland?
I would have said Denver, but I don't know how you overcome Jamal Murray not being there. And as good as Michael Porter is, and he's headed for stardom, and he's been unbelievable really the last couple months, can he do that every night against that team? So I don't think he's quite there yet for that. There'll be inconsistency there. You don't have Jamal Murray. That's an impossible task. So I don't think it's Denver anymore. I would probably say the Clippers, but there's a huge caveat. And it's on Paul George's shoulders. There's a few players going into this postseason, Dan, with an enormous amount of pressure on him. Giannis has a lot of pressure on him. I think Paul George is in that category. I think James Harden is in that category. Those three guys probably have more pressure on than anybody else in the postseason because of some of their playoff failures. Paul George's seasons typically end in a fiery crash where he doesn't play well when they absolutely have to have him. In last year's game 7 against Denver is another example of that. He had games like that in Oklahoma City. He had a couple times like that in Indiana. Go back and look at the last game of Paul George's season. Typically, not great. He's got to be big for them to have a chance. But I do think probably the talent of Kawhi and Paul George gives them the best chance against AD and LeBron.
Any chance for the Celtics against the Nets?
I say, look, Jason Tatum's got to be the best player on the floor in any night in which they win. How much can you expect that out of one guy when you're playing against the firepower that the Nets have? There's never been a collection of offenses, raw offensive talent, at the top of one roster in the history of this league. That's what you're facing. He went to the line 17 times last night. He was sensational. The Nets aren't going to foul him that much. They're going to make him make more shots than that, not let him get into a rhythm at the foul line. And even if he is great in this series, which I think he can be, Kemba Walker has to be even better probably. Yeah. And he's been really good lately. But is Kemba Walker going to give you 25 a night in this series? I don't think so. And that's what it would take to even win, I think, 2 games. I think it's probably a 5-game series. Maybe the Celtics get an early split. We get interested for a second. At the end of the day, I do not know how any team is supposed to match the firepower of what those three guys bring to the table because they can beat you on every platform offensively.
Who's your MVP?
Wow, it was Embiid most of the season, but I think at the end of the day, I'm going to pull for the guy that was there every night, and I know that's a big part of this argument. I typically defend guys that miss a little bit of time. In fact, Embiid for Rookie of the Year, I thought it was a joke that he didn't win it, even though he played 31 games. I said, wait a second, you're going to tell me my eyes did not see Joel Embiid as the most dominant rookie player that year, first-year player? Obviously he was. People thought he didn't play enough, so Malcolm Brogdon gets Rookie of the Year. I was against that. I'm at the point now with LeBron missing so much time, Embiid missing so much time, Harden missing so much time. They were the three guys, I think, in the mix. If we're going to reward a guy for being there every night, that also, by the way, is 26-11-8, I'm all for it. So I think Jokic is deserving of it, and I think Jokic will win it. But I thought Joel Embiid for 75-80% of the season was the MVP. It just got to the point he just missed a little bit too much time, and I think Jokic should be rewarded for being there every night.
How many times did you face the Bulls when they had Jordan, Pippen, and Rodman?
I don't know the number of games off the top of my head, but I'll tell you this. My career was 1990 to 2000. I was in the Eastern Conference for a good part of that. They won six titles during that time. I saw more than my share of those guys. And to this day, one of the most, you know, intimidating things you faced as a player, they were the only team I ever played against in the NBA that pressed after free throws and got away with it. When you got Rodman, Pippen, Jordan, Ron Harper picking you up in the backcourt in a 1-2-1-1 trap with that kind of length, it was amazing to see point guards sort of just run up the floor and wave at you like, yeah, get it, legs. You got it. Bring it up. Because that first pass in the deep corner and you turn and you got Rodman running at you with Scottie Pippen and it was like an eclipse. So, yeah, I saw more than my share. And to this day, that's the greatest defensive team, you know, that I've played against, but I think that's the best defensive team I've ever seen to this day were those mid-90s Bulls teams.
But the best defender out of that group was who?
Scottie Pippen. I think Scottie Pippen is the best defensive player, maybe outside of Bill Russell, and again, a guy I didn't see play, but obviously different roles. Scottie Pippen's the best defender I've ever seen because he was not only the best individual defender, he was the best team help defender as well. The ground he covered, his IQ, his communication, his instincts, combined with 6'8", fingertips touching both sidelines, kind of a nightmare. You know, you came off screens. I played against him. He'd switch. Jordan be on me. They'd switch on the baseline and come off a down screen. I knew I had enough separation to get a clean shot off because I'd done it a million times in my life. Catch, turn, pivot, turn, left shoulder, go to square up, and all of a sudden this arm would come out of nowhere. And now you're going up and you're having to make a pass in midair. That was the recover ability of Scottie Pippen. He was special, one of a kind in the way that he covered ground out there.
You ever make Jordan mad?
Yes, I did, because Jordan loved to gamble defensively. He would turn his head. Yeah, he did. He did. That's why I threw defensively in there, because there's another level of gambling Michael likes as well. But he was the kind of guy that, you know, he'd be guarding me. And obviously I wasn't going to do a ton off the dribble against a guy like that. So he knew kind of I was going to spot up and wait. He loved to turn his head and, oh, did he love to rake down in the post, try to go get Chris Webber, Juwan Howard, Rasheed Wallace, get those guys from behind when they'd make a move to the middle. I would relocate. Ball would come out, get some space. So, yes, I remember a game which I hit a couple of threes because he turned his head and left me. And I remember after the second or third one, running down a court and Michael saying to me on the way down a court, well, that's it for you. I'm not leaving you again. And it's pretty much like the equivalent of, I guess, the water company shutting your main off. Like, your water is shut off now. And that's kind of how you felt. So at that point, we're going to have to get it in transition. You know, where Michael is picking up somebody else if that's what you want.
Isn't that amazing? He's telling you your night's done, and you know that he's right.
Yeah, and you know what? If you're making threes against Michael Jordan, you know what I kind of felt like? Hey, that's okay. I already had my night, man. I hit some threes against you. But, you know, he actually, it's funny. I have a picture in my house, and he and I are standing next to each other. It's kind of cool. It's just 23-23, our backs, Jordan Legler. We're talking to each other. I got a little smirk on my face. We're talking, and somebody said, oh, you know, was that Jordan talking trash to you? And I said, no, actually, that was the first game I played after the three-point shootout in San Antonio when I won it. We played Chicago on the road the very first game after that. And actually, and my daughter was born that week, my first child. They made a big story about that All-Star weekend when I won it. And he was actually asking me about that. He was like, hey, you know, get home and see that little girl. Congratulated me on winning the three-point shootout. And that's what that picture captured. I just got lucky someone happened to take that picture at that time. And it's a pretty cool thing. So obviously greatest of all time. Nothing's ever going to change my mind about that because I saw it up close and personal, too personal, seeing that team as many times as I did in the 90s. But that was a cool, cool moment for me because it showed you the humanity of Michael Jordan as well and his awareness of kind of like what was going on. And for a guy like me, that was a year which I had a breakout year, and that was a national moment for me. For Michael Jordan to recognize that was pretty cool.
Legs, great to talk to you as always. Thanks for the stories.
Thanks, Dan. You got it.
That's Tim Legler, ESPN NBA analyst. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com. or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise, set several generations after the last installment, in which apes are the dominant species. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike and embark on a journey that will redefine the planet. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Well, it's halftime, and the scoreboard's not looking good. You're feeling low. You're not sure you can pull out the win. But that's when you dig deep. Lift your head up. You say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists. Take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
See, and that's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies. There's so much to do.
Yeah, you could play countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. That's new. I don't remember that from the old Monopoly game, but it sounds awesome. And you can charge players rent for your iconic properties. Great.
You can even work with your friends to crack open community chests and in tournaments to get extra rewards and climb the leaderboard. I'm in for sure.
So get out there, put on your game face, download Monopoly Go right now for free at the App Store or Google Play. Let's go.
We know that quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for you and your partner whenever you want. Two beds in one, firmer or softer on each side, you decide. And it helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature as well, quiets their snoring, so you stay sleeping comfortably all night long. Sleep Number does everything. My Sleep Number setting is 75. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep. They provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. You will never need another bed. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. If you do the quick math, the less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your products or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep, which is obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So reduce your cost. Reduce the headaches. Smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial, management, inventory, HR under one platform. And one source of truth with NetSuite. You reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud, so there's no hardware required. And you can access from anywhere. So you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes onto one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Right now, backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. So head to netsuite.com/Patrick. netsuite.com/Patrick. The greatest catcher in baseball history, in my opinion, Johnny Bench, joining us on the program. We got a little spirited there in the last segment there with the what was going on with the White Sox and the rookie player, Yermín Mercedes. That he swings on a 3-0 pitch. You got a positional player in there. It's 15-4. It's the ninth inning. Let me start there. These damn unwritten rules of baseball, John. So, what are you supposed to do if you're at the plate? Now, let me at least say that Tony La Russa said to his rookie to take the pitch. So I have a problem that he disregarded Tony La Russa. But the situation itself, 3-0 positional player, 47-mile-an-hour IFAS pitch, and it's 15-4.
What would you have done, Dan?
I would have swung.
What would you have done? The guy threw four pitches in 26 seconds. Who's going to look at a coach? No. All right, let's just call the game. All right, we got the mercy rule. Let's just cancel the game. okay, they're ahead. They got to bring in some, so we forfeit. Let's just go ahead and quit. I mean, the guy, you know, the guy's up there. He's trying to pad his stats. It doesn't, there's no rules anymore. I mean, those things you're doing, if Tony gave him the stake, and it's just a simple, you know, I don't think how much any manager's head's in the game at the time, except he knows 3-0 that somebody shouldn't be swinging necessarily.
Would you have swung though, John?
Probably. But if I, you know, if I'd have got a take sign, obviously not. And back in those days, I doubt it. I would have probably looked in the dugout and Sparky would have went, take one. But Alex Graham was down at third base. He would have been fine. He would have flashed the sign. And so, you know, he hits a home run on his next pitch, which is now it's 3-1. So is that a bad sign?
I don't know.
So are we just saying, okay, remember when Tatis did this? I mean, I think we've just been over this one another time and it was doing this. And it's just now, the, you know, the young kid's not whatever. And whether he's going to look for a sign at this point, I don't have anything of a problem with it. But I do have a problem with him, you know, throwing at the guy, you know, in the game. And
yeah, but Tony said, hey, it's okay. I mean, basically, he gave the opposition the green light to throw at his player the next game because he said there's going to be consequences. Yeah.
Yeah, he knew it was coming. Everybody knew it was coming. Everybody in the world knew it was coming. You know, but the kid gets kicked out. The pitcher gets kicked out of the game. And, you know, the kid was pitching a great game, too. But, you know, he's on. It's sort of like everybody's watching you in the dugout, waiting for you to do it. Who do we do? What time do we do it? When do we pick the guy? Who is the guy? Let's get this guy. And if it was going to be a problem, then Tony could have held him out of the lineup. But I think he also wanted to prove a point to the kid, saying, hey, if you do this, you know, you got to face the consequences. And this is probably what's going to happen.
Yeah, but he
didn't throw it at his head. He threw it behind his back, down his legs and everything else. So.
Yeah, but Tony can't be making this public. Like, why don't you – Tony's a Hall of Fame manager. Why don't you just say, look, we're going to keep it in-house. We're going to talk about this. It's a learning experience. He's a rookie. He's talented, blah, blah, blah. He's basically saying, hey, you know, he's got to understand this. There's going to be consequences.
I'm sure they're in the clubhouse. Our clubhouse leaders, supposedly,
yeah,
quote-unquote leaders, are saying, hey, you better expect what's coming, okay? You made a mistake. You did the wrong thing. And the kid's saying, well, I got a chance to hit a three-run homer. I've got 3 more RBIs on my list. I go into arbitration next year. I'm going to arbitration, and my guy says, well, you know, you had 97 RBIs. Oh, that's right. You hit that 3-run homer. We're not going to count that. We're not going to count that today, Rick.
Do you think that players really care about that they're embarrassed to be no-hit in today's game?
Oh, gosh, yes.
I don't think so. Because these guys, nobody puts the ball in play. They're all swinging for a home run.
Dan, you're a basketball player, okay? You're a basketball player and golfer. You don't, you know, I mean, hey, come on.
Johnny, I threw a no-hitter
I'm not
in
going
high
to get
school.
No-hitter. I remember I hit a home run in the Astrodome off a kid, and we were in the 8th inning. And I came in, and Joe Morgan gave me the biggest hug in the world because the one thing he didn't want to be was no-hit. We got no hit twice one year by Rick Wise. Rick Sonny Wise. And he hit home runs.
He hit two home runs. I was at the game.
You were at the game.
And did you? I was there at the Kenny Holtzman no-hitter.
Well, I think I remember for some reason you being there because I heard you saying, for God's sake, Johnny, bunt!
And you did. In the 7th inning, you tried to bunt. Am I right?
Yes.
You tried to bunt. And Fritzy has a problem with trying to bunt to ruin a no-hitter. Go ahead, Fritzy. Say it to Johnny.
Oh, he is. He is. He's in the doghouse.
I just think that's sometimes there's a way that it could be even worse. No, that you have to stick your – you have to turn around and – I don't know, to square around and bunt. You're admitting the only chance we have of getting on base is to just stick the bat out, that we can't just –
No, you
swing.
Said it was weak. And tell Johnny that he was weak and embarrassing.
I love Johnny Bench, and it's – I'm –
don't try that. Don't work that angle, Fritzy, all right?
I'm disappointed to hear
what
that.
What happens now if I drop a bunt, we get a base hit, and now all of a sudden this guy is so rattled, the floodgates open, and we win the game?
Or that's the only hit of the game, and you ruin the no-hitter.
What happened with your pitching, Fritzy? If you were pitching and I bunted on you,
I would be so angry.
You'd try to pick me off. Yeah, you'd have tried to pick me off and hit me. Yeah, nope. You would have picked off. You wouldn't even thrown to the first baseman. You just hit me in the leg or something.
You'd like to charge the mound right now, wouldn't you, Johnny? If Fritzy's on the mound, you would charge the mound.
I'm going to tell you. You know, Fritzy's been good to me. He's never sent me a gift for all these times I've been on and everything else. I get no parting gift.
Wow.
I get no parting gifts. I get nothing from this.
Wow.
All I get is Fritzy's got an idea. Fritzy, you know, you got a great microphone. Keep it. You know, it's what you do best.
Thank you.
No, not really. not really. But I told you, I was at the game when Johnny tried to bunt to ruin Ken Holdsmith's
no-hitter. And I was hoping you were wrong and that he wouldn't stick the bat out to try to ruin the
Because
no-hitter.
You think that Johnny is weak and soft, that he would do that to try to...
Not Johnny specifically, that particular play.
Yeah, that was weak, and so Johnny was weak by doing that. And I said, today's player I don't think is as concerned about getting no hit, just like they don't care about striking out 200 times. Back then, you didn't want to strike out, and you certainly didn't want somebody to no hit you.
No hit. Because then the next day, Fritzy says, "You believe that Reds got no hit last night?"
Right, Todd?
Yeah, I'm disappointed.
You're disappointed, in Johnny.
What's the consensus on the other Dan?
Yes, McLovin.
It's just so unfamiliar to me because I'm a Phillies fan, and like Mike Schmidt would never even consider bunting. So I don't even.
Wow.
It's not even my wheel. I wouldn't think about it.
I'm going to tell Mike, and Mike will be proud you said that, but. Mike would have dropped down a bunt every now and then.
And Philly fans would still be upset with Schmidt if he even tried to do. No matter what Schmidt did, Philly fans didn't like him.
Right. Does he get more mail when he keeps saying, "I'm a Phillies fan"?
But your rookie year in 68, would you have swung on a 3-0 pitch?
Oh, yeah. You mean in that
No,
situation.
If you were told not to.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. In 68, Dave Bristol would have fined me $100 and never went half my week salary.
But they changed the mound after 68. How much of an advantage was it for the pitchers that year?
Well, they dropped it down by what, 1 or 2 inches, I think it was, and Gibson had just had that 1.12 ERA, and they're saying we've got to get more offense in, and that's when the American League decided to go with the designated hitter, and now it's like every bomb is a bomb. And my buddy Mike Zunino, they're talking about him, either walk, strike out, or hit a home run. And, because these guys, and there is no consequence. I mean, I see guys, I look at the lineup, these guys are hitting 159, 167. How are they in the lineup? I mean, in these days, it's fine. In our day, because, they have the Earl Weaver mentality of hit the 3-run homer. Let's get that going on the board. But in our day, you were hitting anywhere close to 220. You were looking over your, hoping when you got to the park, your locker was still had a little uniform in it.
But they don't even have a Mendoza line now, because Mendoza's actually a decent hitter in today's game, John.
The 200 line.
Yes.
I was talking to Euchre the other day, because he's got a lifetime, I think, 200 or 206 or whatever it is. But we laugh about it and everything else. But no, there's nothing out there anymore that says Mendoza or anything else in 200. The barrier, I mean, we had Lee May, Tony Perez, and I. And we had, if whoever struck out 100 times first, and we were trying everything to keep from doing that, had to buy the other guy bottles of champagne. I mean, that's, we were serious about not reaching that 100. We've got a guy, how many now probably has 100 strikeouts already? Is Gallo up there close?
He might be. Do you realize Earl Weaver would be great in today's baseball from the standpoint of, hey, go up there and hit a 3-run homer.
That's all, Butch. I mean, we had a guy named Don Heffner was a manager, called everybody Butch, and he would hit that 3-run homer, man. And Earl would sit back there and wait for somebody to do it. And, of course, I think somebody was talking about, you put a 3 runs on the board with that Orioles staff, you're probably going to have a winner. And in those days, Palmer had 20 and Cuellar and McNally and Pat Dobson. They had the pitching to do it, and you can play for that one swing that would bring you a win. Offense was offense.
Do you ever talk to Brooks Robinson about that 1970 World Series where he caught everything and then caught things that didn't seem humanly possible?
We laugh every time. I still want my Hickok Belt Award. I want it back. He robbed me.
God, he was so good, John. He was unbelievable. Like, imagine a fielder changing the complexion of an entire World Series.
Yeah. In 1971, in the All-Star game, I hit a bullet down down there, and he caught it just like it was nothing again. And I threw up my arms, and I threw up my arms like that as I'm running to first base, and he's laughing all the way as he's throwing it to first. It was just amazing. And you know, the thing, the way he did it, he didn't do it with any show or anything else. He and the vacuum cleaner, you know, and there were other great third basemen. You mentioned Schmitty. Schmitty was about as good as they got at third as well. And today you watch these guys and their acrobats, Arenado and Chapman, and guys that are just phenomenal. I mean, you know, you want to look at averages, you know, Dan, back in our days, you had these guys running the outfield. But these guys are running 9.500s out there in the outfield. They're catching everything. They're jumping over fences. Yeah. They are such athletes today. I can't imagine anybody ever hitting 400 again. I think the new line is probably 350 or 360. It's just these guys in the infield, they're stealing base hits left and right. I mean, they're playing so deep. They got the coverage. They do that. They're acrobatic. They steal balls down the line. They throw the ball across the infield in a bullet. I mean, to watch today's athletes is just totally incredible to me, to see the talents that they have. And a lot of that was done with Ozzie. Ozzie became one of the leaders of you know, being such an unbelievable fielder. And then they followed with Vizquel, and they followed with guys that could do all this stuff. I mean, Ozzie gets a lot of the credit, but these guys are taking so much pride in their defense that they become just a game changer every time you look up.
Great to talk to you. Sorry that Fritzy called you weak and soft, but it's always great to talk to you.
Fritzy, you got my address, buddy. You better start sending some gifts.
Wow.
I'm on the case.
Wow, that's the great Johnny Bench.
This is making up.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dan.
Fritzy called him out, called him weak. He called Johnny Bench like that trying to bunt.
The act of doing that, I guess.
I couldn't hear that truck, you know, when it normally beeps when it's backing up.
Indirectly, I'm calling Johnny Bench weak. But I wrote a book report about him in elementary school. I love Johnny
Bench.
No,
I don't care. You called him weak. You said that's weak. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise, set several generations after the last installment, in which apes are the dominant species. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike and embark on a journey that will redefine the planet. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Well, it's halftime, and the scoreboard's not looking good. You're feeling low. You're not sure you can pull out the win. But that's when you dig deep. Lift your head up. You say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists. Take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
See, and that's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies. There's so much to do.
Yeah, you could play countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. That's new. I don't remember that from the old Monopoly game, but it sounds awesome. And you can charge players rent for your iconic properties. Great.
You can even work with your friends to crack open community chests and in tournaments to get extra rewards and climb the leaderboard. I'm in for sure.
So get out there, put on your game face, download Monopoly Go right now for free at the App Store or Google Play. Let's go.
As you may have realized, I watch a lot of sports, like a lot. That's why I like Prime Video. It has all my live sports and docs in one app, like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey, and the National Women's Soccer League, both included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report sports add-on, or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. All in one app with one password. Prime Video. It's all your favorite sports in one place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
It is getting that time of the year. It's Miller time. You don't need a watch or a clock to tell you. It's Miller time. Weather gets a little bit warmer. All of a sudden, the beer gets a little colder.
It's beer cracking season.
Okay. I don't know if it says that on the calendar. It's a beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters the most. It's a light beer that tastes like beer. That's why I reach for a Miller Lite. And it's less filling, only 96 calories. They've been doing this since 1975. They have perfected it. You know, that summer afternoon, we're coming into that time of the year, be like, oh, man.
Crack one?
Yes, or two. Don't look at your watch. Don't look at the clock. Don't look at the calendar. You know. Miller Lite, the great taste, less filling, tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Patrick, or you can pretty much find it anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories, fewer carbs than premium regular beer. Miller Lite. He's the Hall of Famer, Turner Sports play-by-play announcer. Marv Albert called last night's Wizards-Celtics play-in tournament alongside Grant Hill. You can follow the Eastern Conference play-in tournament finale. TNT will air more NBA playoff games than any other network starting this Sunday, May 23rd. Always great to hear Marv Albert's voice, who joins us now. Marv announcing his retirement following this year's postseason. Marv, thanks for joining us. Why now?
Always a pleasure. Why am I joining you now?
No, why are you retiring?
I'm kidding. I just felt 55 years of NBA and near 60 in broadcasting overall. It's enough. And my two pugs, Trixie and Madison, insisted that I spend more time with them. My wife, Heather, kind of on the fence in that area. I think I will miss a lot of things about broadcasting, particularly the NBA. It's more the preparation and, you know, the people that you deal with, and the people in the NBA, particularly the coaches who you get to know so well over the years, and many who I've worked with when they turn to broadcasting. But I won't feel it, Dan, I think, until next November when the season starts, because I'd normally have the summer anyway. So as I said, I just think it was time. I don't want to be one of those people who, you know, just keeps going and going. I probably could have gone a few more years, but I thought this was the right time.
I was wondering that you were calling Rangers games, calling Knicks games, so it was territorial there. And then when you started to do national broadcast, I didn't know if any network executive tried to change you and your style or voice to have it conform to, I guess, what we think should be a national broadcaster instead of a local one.
Yeah, you know, that I think that's changed now. When you listen, be it the networks over the air or cable, people who are doing games, you have different styles now. I think that's really changed to the type of voice or the type of style, where everything was kind of straight-laced in terms of the presentation. No one ever tried, I must say. But that may have something to do with the fact that the networks were all stationed primarily in the New York area, and they heard me there.
Oh, okay.
So it was acceptable there, and there was a degree of success there. So I never had anybody say anything like that, no.
Greatest performance you ever witnessed on the basketball floor in a game you called?
There were a number of them. I can tell you, in terms of an event, the 92 Dream Team, which I was fortunate to broadcast for NBC, that was I got the chills when they first came out in the Tournament of Americas. I remember that they had to qualify in Portland, Oregon. And you see the greatest team ever assembled in sports history. You know, when they all walked out onto the court and got the standing ovation, Michael and Magic and Stockton and Barkley and Bird and so on, Malone. That was an incredible moment. In terms of major games, several of them involved Michael Jordan. The flu game, the six threes against Portland when he wasn't really a three-point shooter, but I recall he came out early, way before the guys came out to warm up, just to shoot threes. And then he hit the sixth. And I was working with the czar, Mike Fratello. You recall that name. And also Magic Johnson. And then Michael had that shrug when he hit the sixth, looking over towards our table. He was actually looking at Michael, although Mike Fratello claims he was you know, giving him the sign and looking at him, which wasn't the case. But that was one of the great thrills. There were also situations in my days with the Knicks when they won their first championship in 69-70. There were several dramatic games when Willis Reed got hurt. People thought he was not going to play in Game 7. And then he walked out of the court late in warm-ups. And I recall the Laker team just stopped and stared. Will Chamberlain couldn't believe that Willis was taking the court. And he hit two jump shots early.
Yeah.
And that was his contribution, except for the fact that he inspired them. And it was really, it was one of the great moments in New York sports when they won. Because they had never won a championship. Then they won in 73. It wasn't quite the same feeling they won in L.A. So you didn't have the New York fans on hand. But that was a terrific team because of the style. They played with, the ball movement. It's kind of like Phil Jackson's triangle in later years. And it was such a smart team, with Bill Bradley and Phil was on that team, although he was injured that year. And Dave DeBuscher, Willis, Clyde. People forgot in Game 7 because all the conversation dealt around Willis playing. But Walt Frazier had one of the all-time greatest playoff games. He had 36 points, 19 assists, 7 rebounds. And that sometimes is forgotten, except when Clyde mentions it on the air.
Well, he was also going against Jerry West. I think he also had 6 steals in there. It was, and, yeah. he didn't win MVP. Willis got MVP, right?
He did. Yes, he had some good games early, but he got hurt actually in Game 5, and that was Red Holzman, who was the head coach. Accepted input from his players, particularly Bradley and DeBuscher. And there were no assistant coaches in those days. But Bradley and DeBuscher suggested a movement offense that really worked against a Laker team that was, it was Chamberlain, West. They were a super team, although they only, Jerry West just won the one championship, as it turned out, as great as he was. But it was really DeBuscher and Bradley's input. So I think that had a lot to do with it, because now you see benches where, there are 10 coaches, 5 sitting behind the regular bench, and it's a completely different situation. And, it's advanced so dramatically in recent years in terms of what the coaches do and the video work and the analytics. It's so different than the basics that Red Holzman or Red Auerbach had, and, of course, both had great success.
What's the strangest thing you ever witnessed on the basketball floor?
Well, this was on the floor and off the floor, and that would be the finals game, 1994. That was Knicks, Houston, and it was June 17th, I believe. And I'm doing the game courtside, and all of a sudden, people are looking at the monitors, which were at the press table, and it was the day of the O.J. chase.
Yeah.
And I'm going back and forth with the basketball play-by-play and Tom Brokaw back in the NBC studio, and the players are wondering what's going on. Pat Riley asked, what's happening? And Kenny Smith, who was then with the Rockets, was right at the Knick bench. It was during a lull in the action. And Riley asked him what's going on. Kenny says to Pat, they're chasing O.J. Simpson, which is not giving you much information.
No.
But this went on right throughout people who were near courtside when the press was at courtside, and they had also TV monitors, just hunched over all the newspaper men and watching the chase as this game is going on in the finals. I would say that was the most bizarre I've ever been part of. The other crazy moments I had when I was doing the Olympics for NBC in 88 in Seoul, the Changshil Students Gymnasium where the boxing was held, and it was such a crazy setup, and it came out later, as we suspected, there were so many fights being fixed and, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on. But they had two rings going at the same time. So you had bouts in one ring, and in another area you had bouts going on. And, the bell that ends rounds from the ring, say, at the far side, would be heard at the near side, and boxers would stop. And a couple of times guys were knocked out because they stopped fighting off the bell. They thought the round was over, you know. And that was also the series of fights where Roy Jones was robbed of a decision. And there's another
bout. Were you on the call, Marv, when the was it the Bruins and Rangers? And is this when you had the fight in the stands? Were you on the call with that one?
You know, no, I wasn't. I was doing a Knick game out of town.
Oh, okay.
But that was the situation where the Bruins actually went up into the stands, which was to the right of our broadcast booth, which was very low then at the Garden. It was over what they call the vomitory where the players came out. So I missed that one. Was Mike Milbury involved in that?
Yeah, he was beating somebody with his shoe.
Yes. Yeah. I saw far too many fights when I was doing hockey, but I tried to use my boxing play-by-play skills at the time. But, I thought they had a pretty good handle on it in terms of cutting down on it. It's ridiculous. I mean, but I think there was the feeling that this is part of what is attractive to a segment of fans. And then we saw the Tom Wilson situation a couple of weeks ago against the Rangers, and that was terrible, you know. So,
you know, I was still, wondering this. This time, you know, next year in the fall, this sounds like something Letterman would have done as a skit. He would have you down at the park calling little kids playing basketball play-by-play because you're retiring. That sounds like something Letterman would do.
Well, we had a similar skit once where I'm calling the game. It's funny you mentioned this because I was sitting on a couch in his office. He had a basketball game on. And he asked me, this was a skit, to come in and call the game. So
So Letterman has you on his couch, and you're watching a basketball game.
Yeah, yeah. And then he tells me to cut it out. Yeah, it was David. Yeah.
Oh, so you're doing play-by-play watching the game with Dave, and Dave doesn't want to hear you do
it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, actually, you know, that's the way I started, and my brothers Al and Steve, who also did NBA games, we would turn down the sound of the TV and do games on our tape recorder. And my son Kenny did the same with basketball and hockey. And we had our own fictitious radio station. It was great practice at the time. Little did I know that I'd be doing virtual calls these days off the television set, you know, so it was good practice for what's taking place now with both TNT and ESPN.
Great to talk to you. Have fun during the postseason, and please give my best to Heather. And thanks for joining us, Marv.
Anytime, Dan. Thank you. I enjoy listening and watching you all the time. So thanks so much.
That's Marv Albert, going to retire at the end of the postseason.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft.
That's right. We will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and surprises.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year.
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.